Wednesday, July 27, 2016. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, I'd like to thank you for listening and let you know that if you would like to recommend the Daily Dose to a friend, I don't even care, maybe you want to recommend the Daily Dose to an enemy, whatever, whoever you want to recommend the Daily Dose to, we would appreciate that. Let them know they can find the podcast every single week on places like iTunes. You can go to Stitcher. You can go to Podcast Republic. You can go to somewhere like Google Play. Pretty much anywhere that podcasts are hosted. Or if they are looking maybe for some new shows, want to spice up their podcast feed just a little bit, have them head over to rogueintel.com. You can listen to the Daily Dose there, and you can also try a few of the other podcasts that are on the Rogue Intel Podcast Network. I guarantee you are going to find something that you like over on the Rogue Intel Podcast Network. Now, I've told you before, one of the best parts about doing the Daily Dose is that I have some of the smartest and honestly most creative listeners that are out there. Like, it's not the typical rah-rah sports fan that gets the Daily Dose. It's someone that's a little bit smarter than that. You know, last week, of course, we did our 2016 summer email show, and I actually heard back from a few different people. I had even said, because we had talked about, you know, the 30 for 30s, and I kind of felt like the 30 for 30s seem like they're going downhill. Like, I'm still going to watch the 30 for 30s. ESPN does the 30 for 30 documentaries on certain subjects. Like, they might pick out a team, or they might pick out a year, or they might pick out an event to talk about. But last week on the show, I had said how I thought the quality of them was maybe starting to go downhill just a little bit, starting to fade. And so I had asked some of my listeners, hey, what do you got? You got any better ideas for 30 for 30? And of course, we have a couple contributors to the show. We have a number of contributors to the show. I couldn't possibly come up with all this nonsense by myself. But I had Rob and John both kick in a few additions. So ESPN, if you're out there listening and you're straining, you're like struggling, you're like, ugh, we just did a 30 for 30 on the 86 Mets. That, you know, I don't know. Is that really a big story? We've got a couple ideas for you. So here's a few contributions that we had. 30 for 30. Michael Vick. Puppy Love. A Dog's Perspective. See, I kind of like that. 30 for 30, Pete Rose, My Life in Vegas. It's not bad. It's not bad. How about 30 for 30, Daddy Daycare, The Sean Kemp Story? Okay. Now we're getting somewhere. The 90s in Dallas. Anyone want to see the 30 for 30, Cocaine Cowboys? And finally, I would say it's probably our winner. It might be one of the best ones we got. 30 for 30, King of the Hardwood, Wilt Chamberlain. Really? See, I told you, I've got smart listeners. We also had a suggestion from Big Rob that maybe the Daily Dose should come out with our own line of t-shirts, and that maybe the first round of them should say something like, Daily Dose, we're mostly against sacrificing children. I don't know. If you guys are interested, you let me know. We'll make something like that happen. Today on the show, we have something different for you. Look, we love the NFL. It outdraws the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball combined in this country. We are desperate for football to return as soon as possible. So I thought that we might have to talk some NFL. And you know, we also love lists here on the Daily Dose. I mean, of course, we do our Daily Dose Top 5. Most weeks, almost every single week, always a popular segment that we do here. But I thought I would try to combine the two, make it appealing to everyone. No matter who your team is, I think you are going to enjoy this show. So we are going to begin compiling a list of the best player in the history of each NFL franchise. I have come up with my list, and today, joining me in the Daily Dose studio with his own list will be longtime friend of the show, Mike from Castle Rock. Mike is a guy that not only knows sports, but you know, he also has a sense of history about the league. Because you can't just say the best player in the history of like the New York Giants and say Odell Beckham Jr. I know he's a phenomenal player, and maybe eventually he is the guy, but he's not the guy yet. So Mike agreed to join me on this adventure. You know, we talked. Mike, thanks so much for joining us on the Daily Dose. I appreciate you coming in for this.
No problem. This is going to be fun.
Well, you know, we talked about it a little bit, and we're kind of discussing when we first began discussing how we were going to do this. And there were certain teams that were very difficult to pick a player, but it was for totally different reasons.
Correct. There's some that you've got a handful to choose from. Many teams have first ballot Hall of Famers, different generations, very difficult to narrow down to one. But of course, there you've got some teams that it's almost like this year's presidential election where you feel hard enough to pick even one.
Yes.
So it's going to be a fun one.
It is. And you know, the one stipulation that we did put on this was that the player that we choose had to play quality seasons with the team he is nominated for. So for instance, like Jerry Rice is without question probably the most decorated player that has ever played for the Seattle Seahawks. But that's not exactly where he, you know, reached all those accomplishments. So we'll each nominate maybe a player, maybe multiple players for each franchise, and then we'll try to come to some sort of consensus on each one of these teams and see if we can't come up with the best player for each NFL team in their history. Are we ready to take off on this adventure?
Let's get it going.
All right, here we go. We're gonna start things off alphabetically, I guess. We're gonna go first team. We're gonna go with the Arizona Cardinals. You know, the Cardinals are a charter member of the NFL. They are one of the oldest franchises in history. They actually started in Chicago. You might not know this, but they were actually, for I think like a year, they were called Card Pitt as they combined the Chicago Cardinals and the Pittsburgh team that they had going. They moved to St. Louis. They were in St. Louis for a number of years. Now they're in Arizona. I think they were they at Phoenix for a while?
They were.
They were Phoenix for a while. I think they're just Arizona now, but who knows? Since we started talking, that might have changed again. They have no Super Bowl wins. They do have one appearance. And I guess when I look at Arizona, that kind of sums it up. Like, they've had some okay players. They've had some, I guess, pretty decent players, but they don't have anybody that just boggles your mind. When you look at Arizona, who's the top player that you see for the Arizona Cardinals?
Well, you mentioned that sometimes people automatically think of a current player. One guy that pops into my mind actually is a current player, but he's been there for a while and has been doing it for a long time. Larry Fitzgerald, I think, has got to be a mention. You also mentioned the one Super Bowl appearance, and the man mostly responsible for that, in my opinion, Kurt Warner.
Sure.
You got to give him a nod. He's, you know, he played for three teams, did very well for two of them. Got to be a Hall of Fame quarterback. He's got to be up there for mention in the Arizona Cardinal best player conversation.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well, and I have both of those guys on my list. I've got a couple other guys I want to throw out there. Dan Dierdorf went six Pro Bowls. Dierdorf played, obviously, during some dog days in St. Louis when they weren't very good, but Dierdorf was very good. You know what? Where Dierdorf was underrated? I think he was a really underrated broadcaster. I know a lot of people hated Dan Dierdorf. I actually liked him. I thought he actually gave some insight on the game. Jim Hart was good back in the Air Coryell days. Roy Green, pretty talented wide receiver. Aeneas Williams, someone like that. But I've got to agree with you. My pick, you know, we talked about maybe not the current day. The best player I've ever seen in an Arizona uniform has got to be Larry Fitzgerald.
Yep. You know what? Speaking of back in history, played there for 6 years, Dick Night Train Lane.
Yeah, Night Train Lane's a very good addition to that
Hall
list.
Of Famer. A lot of people don't realize this. He still, to this day, holds the NFL record for most interceptions in one season.
If you ever get a chance, and we've talked about it before on the Daily Dose, go look at Night Train Lane's greatest hits. I would say they would be illegal. They would get you arrested what he did. He was absolutely vicious back there.
Different era. NFL back then.
Different era completely. But pretty interesting guy. I'm good with Fitzgerald on this. Are you set to go with, you know, they're saying that Larry Fitzgerald says he's going to play as long as he has Carson Palmer. Who would have ever thought Carson Palmer would be the key to anything like that?
Not Cincinnati.
No. No, but I'm good with Fitzgerald. Are we good?
Absolutely.
We're moving on. Okay. We're two teams in, and I got to be honest, I'm a little bit stumped. We're going to the Atlanta Falcons. You know, the Atlanta Falcons were an expansion team in 1965. In their history, they are 316, 414, and 6. They went to one Super Bowl. We remember that very well here in Denver as they were fodder for a machine of a Bronco team. Went to that one Super Bowl, got pummeled in that one Super Bowl. The Atlanta Falcons haven't had a ton of success. They haven't had much to talk about. A little bit of a struggle to come up with someone for this team.
I couldn't agree with you more. A lot of my teams, I've got 3, 4, 5, sometimes even 6 guys just as mentions.
It's tough.
I stopped after Deion Sanders.
Well, and Deion Sanders was a phenomenal player when you think of kind of that era that he was playing down there in. Somehow he had them at least kind of competitive. So yeah, Deion Sanders is in the list. I'll give you my guy, and as soon I'm going to say, well, I'll give you two guys. I'll give you two guys, and we can pick either one of them. Claude Humphrey was a defensive end, went to six Pro Bowls, was a five-time first-team All-Pro, and from what I understand, because it's before my time, he was one of the first true pass-rushing specialist kind of guys. They say in 76, had they counted sacks, he would have had 15 sacks in one season. So Claude Humphrey, and then tackle Mike Ken, I don't know, I guess.
You just had 80% of your listeners go,
who? Yes, exactly. All right, let's get to guys you do know. Steve Barkowski?
The kicker, Anderson?
Martin Anderson, yeah. How about Roddy White? Roddy White's pretty good right now, I guess.
Yeah, you know, and he's probably going to get there. Julio Jones maybe in a few years.
Yeah. William Andrews was solid until he got hurt, had the knee injury.
Yeah, yeah, I did struggle with this one.
I did too. I'll give you one name that might, Andre Bad Moon Rising. I don't know. Tough to come up. Michael Vick had some very, very, I guess, productive years down in Atlanta. Tough to come up with somebody for the Atlanta Falcons. Can we pick a guy with Atlanta?
I had a hard time going beyond Deion. I'll say that again.
Deion is probably the best player in their history. Just pound for pound player, it probably is Deion Sanders. I'm okay with that. Tony Gonzalez had a couple decent years down there, but all right, we'll go with Deion with the Atlanta Falcons. But yeah, I don't know if he has the hardware and everything to rack up there, but I can totally see Deion. All right, moving on from the Falcons, I can't take the Falcons anymore. Let's move on to a team that we might think of very recently as being pretty good, but the Carolina Panthers were an expansion team in 1995. They've actually been to two Super Bowls. Yes, they've lost both of them, and we completely enjoyed the most recent one the best. But the Carolina Panthers, just because they're so new to the NFL, I guess, I still think of them as relatively new, they don't have a ton of history. They don't have a ton of guys you can go back to. What's the guy that stands out to you for the Carolina Panthers?
First guy that came to mind for me was Steve Smith.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that might be the guy. Went to five Pro Bowls with the Panthers, had 67 touchdowns in a Panthers uniform.
Based on his size, too, it's just amazing what he accomplished.
I'll never forget, they were playing on, I think, Sunday Night Football one time, and I think that might have been the night that him and Aqib Talib were getting in that fight, and I think it might have been Al Michaels, or it might have been Chris Collinsworth even, and he said, Aqib Talib, don't poke the rattlesnake. Steve Smith is a crazy, crazy man. That is not a guy you want to mix it up with. You know, Julius Peppers, I guess he went to a number of Pro Bowls while he was in Carolina. Cam Newton, I think, has a chance to be the greatest Panther of all time. I don't know.
Luke Kuechly's going to probably be there. I also had Julius Peppers down. First eight seasons with the Panthers. Definitely made a name for himself there.
Do you know who the one retired number is in Carolina Panthers history? Little trivia question there for everybody out there listening.
No.
Sam Mills.
Okay, the short linebacker.
Yes, yes. And you know how many seasons he played there? Three. That's how you know your expansion team. You're like, hey, look, we got to retire somebody's number. I don't know. He's been here for a while. Why don't we just retire his?
They were in a hurry to raise that jersey.
Exactly. We got to get some jerseys up in the rafters. All right, we're going with Steve Smith on the Carolina Panthers. Now, you know, we have one of the newer teams. Let's move to one of the oldest teams. This is an original charter member of the NFL, the Chicago Bears. And the Chicago Bears, yes, a lot of the championships they won were back, I don't know, in the like pre-Civil War days. They've been to two Super Bowls. They won one of them. 1985, they win the 85 Super Bowl, Super Bowl 20. But they have a lot of history. A lot of talented players have come through Chicago. They just, I don't know that they've always found ways to win in Chicago. I don't know if that's where they play or what the situation is there.
This is one of the teams where several names came to mind. A lot of Hall of Famers, of course, the illustrious history of the Bears.
Yeah.
A lot of them are defense. Singletary.
Mike Singletary.
Dick Butkus.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Some tremendous defensive players. As my number one guy, I took Walter Payton.
Yeah, I got to go with Walter as well. You want to talk about a guy that not only found a way to get it done, found a way to get it done with not much offensive talent around him. Name a true quality Bears quarterback in their history. And I mean, it's really tough to come up with much of anything. And I guess, you know, Jim McMahon in that era. But Walter Payton, I mean, he produced every single year that he played with little to no talent around him. He usually had good defenses a lot of the time. He didn't have much offensive line. He didn't have any quarterbacks. Until those mid-80s teams, he didn't have much in the way of wide receivers. Walter Payton, 9-time Pro Bowl, 2 times he was named the NFL MVP. And when he retired as the NFL's leading rusher with over 16,000 yards. Walter Payton was absolutely incredible. You could make a case that Walter Payton might be the greatest football player ever. Maybe not running back, but just player. Remember, there was the one game, I think it was in 84, he played quarterback. They just put him in shotgun and let him play quarterback.
Incredible athlete. Got to give a shout out to Gale Sayers, too.
Yeah, Gale Sayers just didn't do it for a long enough time, but 7 years, went to the Pro Bowl 4 times in those 7 years, but went down with the knee injury. Yeah, the Chicago Bears, they're kind of a funny team because as old as they go back, like you said, a lot of defensive guys, a lot of, you know, names that you recognize, but Walter Payton, to me, has got to be the guy. All right, let's move on to one that was extremely difficult, at least for me. This was an expansion team in 1960. They have been to 8 Super Bowls, and the Dallas Cowboys have won 5 Super Bowls. This, I'll be honest, was one of the toughest ones that I had, simply because it was hard to narrow down it to just one. Like, I had a hard time just picking one guy, and I don't know if I have the right guy yet. There's some really, really good players that have come through the Dallas Cowboys franchise.
Completely loaded with Hall of Famers. They almost have their own wing in Canton. It's incredible the talent that this team has had and the ability they've had to maintain it. Last few years have been less than stellar, but team of the decade and...
Oh, yeah.
Was it the 80s or 90s? Might have been the 90s.
90s, probably. Yeah, because you had like the 92, 93, 94. There was a stretch there where it was every single year, it was Cowboys or Niners. And we knew not only were they going to go to the Super Bowl, they were going to go and win the Super Bowl. Just an incredible stretch. And that takes away, I mean, when you think about those 70s teams, they had some very strong 80s teams, not as great as the 90s were. But the Dallas Cowboys have just been loaded with talent, so many good players. I'm going to throw out a name there. I don't know if he's the guy. He's probably not the guy. But he went to the Pro Bowl 8 times. He led the league in rushing 4 times. He was twice the NFL MVP and retired. He is currently the all-time leading rusher in league history. Emmitt Smith, I know he had talent all around him, but Emmitt Smith was pretty darn good.
Well, once again, we're on the same page here. He did have an incredible amount of talent. But all the talent in the world doesn't mean anything if you don't take advantage of it.
And right.
Clearly he did. Still the NFL's leading rusher, may have held on a year too long just to get that number, but there, just think of the year where he held out for the first couple games.
Right.
And then he came back and the light came on.
And all of a sudden they're playing well again. For all the people that say he was just a product of being behind that offensive line, the offensive line was phenomenal. Troy Aikman was very, very solid. They had very, very good wide receivers. But why, when he went out, did their running game not just produce at these amazing numbers? Like, everyone was like, oh, you just plug anyone in that system. No, it didn't work that way. Emmitt Smith was really, really good. So I got Emmitt in there. I'll throw out another name that could be on this list, and that would be Bob Lilly. Dude went to 11 Pro Bowls. I know they didn't keep defensive stats back then. Bob Lilly, excellent, excellent player in Cowboys history. And how would this list be anything if we didn't have Captain Comeback Roger Staubach on it?
Yeah, I've got Roger Staubach as a close second, actually. Part of the triplets coming back to the 90s here. Aikman probably gets some votes here and there. And,
sure.
You know, maybe even Irvin. He was...
goofy, yeah, but insanely talented.
Unbelievably talented.
Yeah, he was. And, you know, Larry Allen could be on that list as far as just an incredible offensive tackle. Larry Allen could be in there. You know, the amazing thing about Staubach, he didn't play that many, you know, seasons, obviously, with the Navy thing, and he got out a little bit, I don't want to say early, but he got out, you know, he was still playing well. He was 85-29 as a starter. That's like 75%. Of the games he started, he won. That's incredible. Randy White, I think, could definitely be in this list.
Another good one, yes.
Tony Dorsett had some phenomenal years in the 70s and 80s.
Ed Jones.
Ed Too Tall Jones was another great player in Dallas Cowboys. They just have so many. Man, they've had some great players. I'm good with Emmitt on top. I'm fine if anybody wants to try to talk me out of Emmitt Smith being the top player in Dallas Cowboys history, but they have absolutely been loaded. Okay, we go from loaded to not as loaded. formed back in 1930. One of four teams to never make a Super Bowl. They won four championships back in, like, I don't know, the 50s or something, the 30s. The Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions are kind of the poster child for if you just want to be awful year in, year out.
There's a couple of teams like that, and unfortunately for the fan base in Detroit, that is one of them.
Oh, man, just bad.
I tell you what, though, I've been watching football as long as you have, and there may not be a single player that I enjoyed watching that I would stop what I was doing to watch Barry Sanders.
Yep, Barry Sanders was absolutely incredible, and he was like you said, he was must-see TV. It didn't matter what you were doing. It didn't matter what you had going. If there was a game, and we don't get a ton of Lions games back here in, you know, Mountain time zone. If there was a game and the Lions were playing, I would stop and watch Barry Sanders. He went to 10 Pro Bowls. He was the league MVP in 1997. And what, were they a wild card team that year? I mean, it wasn't like they had anything else. Barry Sanders was absolutely amazing. You never knew he was going to break one.
And the frustrating thing was for him is he retired too early.
Yeah. Well, and you know, kind of a weird situation because they say that his dad was so hard on him. His dad had always told him, you're not as good as Jim Brown. You're never going to be the all-time great. And you wonder, because he was just short of breaking Jim Brown's record. I think he retired over 15,000 yards. A season or two more, he breaks that. You wonder if he was just like, all right, then I'm not going to break the record. 99 touchdowns in his career. You don't want to get just one more. Like, just one more touchdown. Like, he could have got one more in, like, one quarter. Barry Sanders was absolutely incredible. I think easily he is the guy for the Detroit Lions. I will throw out Bobby Lane. Bobby Lane, a five-time Pro Bowler. He was 53-29-2 as a starting quarterback in Detroit. That might not mean much anywhere else. In Detroit, you won more than you lost. That's like a miracle.
That's definitely a stat to bring up. Recently retired Calvin Johnson.
Calvin Johnson was very good. Is Calvin Johnson a Hall of Famer?
You know, it's becoming more and more difficult with this pass-happy league for
wide
receivers to get in for some reason. That may be a whole other debate for another show, but I would lean towards yes.
You would think so. He's got huge numbers, and I do think that he has at least a few seasons where he was probably the best in the league at what he did. So there were a couple of seasons that you could say, hey, who's the best receiver in the league? It's Calvin Johnson. So based on that, I guess he gets in. I'll give you another wide receiver that might be on that list a little bit. Herman Moore. Herman Moore was pretty good. Another guy that put up some big numbers back in the, you know, in the those 90s days with Barry Sanders. Maybe he was getting a little bit of help from everybody keying on Barry Sanders, but Herman Moore was pretty good. Lem Barney. Mel Gray? Mel Gray was pretty good. How about Mel Gray? And Dick Knight Train Lane played some seasons up in Detroit.
Yeah, well. You know, I'd mentioned him previously, and he kind of split his career six seasons with each team, I believe, and he's got to be mentioned there.
Sure. No, he was a phenomenal player and a ball hawk, a big-time hitter. Dick Knight Train Lane definitely should be on the Lions list, but I think that one for me, I guess some good players, but that one for me was pretty easy going with Barry Sanders. Let's move on. We'll do one more team here before we take a quick break. Let's move on to a team that has a ton of history. Third oldest franchise in NFL history, Titletown, 13 league championships. They are 4-1 in Super Bowls. Of course, we are talking about the Green Bay Packers. The Green Bay Packers have a ton of history, a lot of good players, and this was one of those ones I could have come up with probably five or six players to put at the top of this list, but I went with the guy, I guess, that just holds all the records. Brett Favre, he set 18 million records when he was up there. Who do you have for the Packers as your top player?
Once again, we are on the same page. I actually had a few quarterbacks for Green Bay.
Yeah, there's a couple you could
Bart Starr.
Bart Starr was
Aaron Rodgers is going to be there. He sat behind Favre, so he might not end up with as long of a career.
Sure.
So he might not get the numbers, but he isn't as wild and crazy, I guess, as Favre. Doesn't make the horrible throws like Favre did, but he's going to be up there mentioned as well. First real big free agent acquisition in football.
Yep, Gotta be Reggie White, the Minister of Defense. And he went up there and had some very, very quality years with the Green Bay Packers. Of course, we remember them winning that Super Bowl back in 97 against the Patriots, and Reggie White was a huge part of that. And we could go back to older players, you know, Forrest Gregg, Willie Davis, Ray Nitschke, of course, had some huge years up in Green Bay. I'll give you one guy that I actually struggled with a little bit. When he retired, the only problem I have with this, he retired like prior to Hitler coming into power. Don Hutson. When Don Hutson retired, he actually had set or held at least 22 NFL records in both scoring and receiving. When we think of guys like, you know, like a Jerry Rice, those were the records he was breaking, was Don Hutson's record. So I guess he gets on the list. But to me, Brett Favre, he did it all. He did it for so long. Three NFL MVPs, set records for most completions, attempts, starts. Yes. Probably fumbles and interceptions and Wrangler jeans and retirements. Set a lot of records.
Most Vicodin at once.
Sure, sure. Worst selfie taken in history. Brett Favre has set a number of records, but you know, he was 160 and 93 as a starter up in Green Bay. So I guess I will go with Brett. And so,
he basically brought them out of obscurity.
Yeah, he did, because there were a number of years when obviously they had their success back in the 60s, but going through the 70s, I mean, they didn't have anything. I mean, they were just consistently 6-10, 7-9. It was a who's who. Don Majkowski, remember the Magic Man?
Oh,
Don
the Magic Man, absolutely.
Yeah, and then he goes down, I think, with an injury, and Brett takes over and never gave it back. Yeah, they were kind of just stuck in mediocrity. And Brett Favre somehow pulled them out, which is bizarre because he was down in Atlanta. He had been drafted, I think, by the Falcons, and they were like, we don't know what to do with this guy. He's a moron. And so they weren't playing him. They weren't doing anything with him. Goes to Green Bay and becomes one of the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history. All right, we got to take a quick break. Stick around as we will finish up the NFC and count down the greatest players for each franchise in NFL history. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Movies. Anime. Comics, video games, and pop culture. These are but mere playthings for the manliest beings in all of podcasting history, the Powerful Nerdcast. Hosted by the gurus of geekdom, Corey and Christian, join them each week to discuss all things nerd culture, everything from Star Wars to Dragon Ball Z, and everything in between. Find the Powerful Nerdcast on the Rogue Intel Podcast Network at rogueintel.com.
What's up, guys? Be sure to check out Now That I'm Older on the Rogue Intel Podcast Network. Me and Kenny sit down and talk about how getting older sucks, but can be awesome at the exact same time. We also look at pop culture, review a few movies, share some personal stories, and just basically poke fun at the world around us. Be sure to check out Now That I'm Older on the Rogue Intel Podcast Network.
I say, boy, every time I gotta go get new boxing gloves for that daggone chicken hawk, I go to rogueintel.com/Amazon. And I get him the bestest boxing gloves that Amazon can buy. Look at that, he's hitting that dog. That is the dumbest dog I've ever seen.
Okay, we are continuing on with our look at the best players from each NFL franchise. We are over on the NFC side, and the next team that we have up is actually the only team in NFL history to win championships in three different cities. I don't know if you realize this or not, but the Rams won a championship in Cleveland. They won one in Los Angeles. They did win one in St. Louis. They are back in Los Angeles now. They have won one Super Bowl. They won those other championships pre-Super Bowl. But the Los Angeles Rams, they have a lot of history. Kind of an odd team, and I guess they've gone through some struggles a little bit in the 70s, somewhat in the 80s. They do have some a rich history. Mike, when you look at the Los Angeles Rams, St. Louis Rams, Cleveland Rams, what guy comes to mind for the Rams for you?
Obviously, some of the guys from the St. Louis Super Bowl immediately pop to mind. I got to tell you, if you're going all time, it's hard to move away from Deacon Jones.
That's exactly who I have as my top guy as well, as Deacon Jones. 8-time Pro Bowl. You know, they didn't keep defensive sacks defensive stats much of anything aside from really just interceptions. But they say that if they had kept defensive stats, he would have had 159.5 sacks. That would be third all-time standing up still today. Deacon Jones was a monster.
Less games per year, too, back then.
Yeah, just 14 games per year. Deacon Jones was amazing. And you wonder if because of what he did as a pass rusher, if he helped another guy that I have on our list, went to 14 Pro Bowls. Merlin Olsen was a really, really good pass rusher. He was a part of that fearsome foursome defense with the Rams. But you wonder how much did he benefit just from playing opposite Deacon Jones, because everyone was scared to death of Deacon Jones.
Well, kind of like we were mentioning with Emmitt Smith, is he a product of his line, but you still have to take advantage of the advantages afforded to you.
Sure, so, absolutely.
Yes, definitely a very good player. Loved him on Little House on the Prairie.
So good on Little House on the Prairie. I'm glad you brought that up. I thought that. I did not bring that up, but I'm glad that you brought that up. Was he a monk or something on that? I don't know what he was. I think he was on there or something. You know, another guy that should probably get at least a mention, Jack Youngblood. Jack Youngblood, very productive back in the 80s. They say he played that Super Bowl, I think it was in 79 against the Steelers, with a broken lower leg. That's a tough guy.
Yeah, absolutely. That just gives you an idea of how tough the NFL was back then. You have to mention Eric Dickerson.
Yep. Eric Dickerson is such an incredible player and such a strange guy, because when you looked at him, like I look at Barry Sanders, I look at Walter Payton, guys like that, kind of compact, kind of small guys, tough to bring down because you couldn't always find him. Eric Dickerson was this huge guy. He ran straight up and he just plowed through everybody. It didn't make any sense for him to be that size and be that fast, though. He could just glide past people.
With the over-analytics of today's NFL and the draft and the combine and everything like that, his running style would get so critiqued.
Oh, yeah, it absolutely would. He wouldn't be able to do it today. Everyone would be talking about what a terrible style runner he is. He was so productive, though. Did have the season where he broke 2,000 yards. That was in Los Angeles. Los Angeles, yeah, before they moved to St. Louis. Eric Dickerson had some hugely productive years. I'll give you another guy that could probably at least be a mention would be Orlando Pace. Obviously, you know, the years that they had in St. Louis, you had the Kurt Warners, you had the Torrey Holtz, you had the Isaac Bruce,
Marshall Falk.
Falk definitely would be worth mentioning, but Orlando Pace was kind of the anchor on some of those offensive lines that was holding up in those passing games and the greatest show on turf. He was very, very productive in a Rams uniform as well.
Yes, definitely an anchor. You don't get the glory when you're on the line, but
sure,
definitely worth a mention.
There's no stats to keep for the line guys. I think that's that's the hardest part. Like with the defense, we can say, well, he had this many interceptions. Offense, obviously, you know, well, he had this many catches, this many carries. With the offensive line, you're just like, well, I don't really like block some guys.
Well, and they always say when you're mentioning an offensive lineman,
yes,
it's a bad thing.
It's a bad thing. Yeah, the best thing an offensive lineman, much like a referee, the best thing you can do is not be noticed.
That's a fact.
Long snappers all fall into that same category. The Rams do have a history. I don't know what they're going to do being back in L.A., but Deacon Jones, for me, has got to be the guy. Absolutely amazing player. All right, we'll move on to a team. They came into the league in 1960 as an expansion team. They went to 4 Super Bowls. Unfortunately for the Minnesota Vikings, they lost all 4 of those Super Bowls. This one was not, I guess, as tough for me. They had some good teams. I don't know if the Minnesota Vikings have had these hugely big name individual athletes, though.
Yeah, they've had some good names out there. You have to mention Fran Tarkenton.
Sure.
Chris Carter, Randy Moss.
Absolutely.
During their heyday there.
Yep.
For me, this one actually wasn't too terribly difficult. I've got to go with Adrian Peterson.
You're going Adrian Peterson. Wow. I think this is going to be the first time we are going to disagree. But I understand the Adrian Peterson pick. Hugely productive. He's put up gigantic numbers. And to be fair, he's done it without a ton of help. He doesn't have a lot. He's getting more now, but he's had to labor through some pretty difficult seasons before he got to that. I'm going to go with Alan Page. Alan Page went to 9 Pro Bowls. He led the Purple People Eaters defense that got to 4 Super Bowls. And then, of course, you know, lost 4 Super Bowls. But still, Alan Page, highly productive, played on that defensive line with guys like Jim Marshall. I'll give you another name that pretty productive, Randall McDaniel. Randall McDaniel had some big seasons with the Vikings. But, you know, I can understand Peterson. I could understand Tarkenton. And like I said, my pick would be Page. The Vikings are just kind of a goofy franchise. They were so close last year to actually doing something and knocking off the Seahawks.
Kicker.
Yeah, you know, the one thing we're not going to name right now is probably the current kicker for the Minnesota Vikings.
You know, John Randall was a beast in John his Randall heyday as well.
Unblockable. He absolutely was. And, you know, that late 90s team, you had mentioned it with Chris Carter and Randy Moss. Randall Cunningham had some productive seasons up there. It seemed like they plugged in a few different quarterbacks, though, during that era. And I think if you're throwing to Randy Moss and Chris Carter, I don't know, just throw it up.
Chuck it and go.
Yeah, I mean, you had, I think Jeff George even had a couple of decent seasons. Brad Johnson had some good years up there. Of course, Randall Cunningham. But that late 90s team that they had, again, if not for a kicker. Wow, they have a really bad history with kickers, don't they?
Yeah, the first miss all year, if I remember right.
Yeah, I think that's right.
You could also even go a little bit further back in the game. Can't remember his name, the running back that should have gone down in bounds and decided to step out of bounds and stop the clock.
Kid from Ohio State. Smith? Robert Smith? I think it was Robert Smith. Yeah, if he stays in bounds, it was like a soft move, too. Like, he could have plowed forward, stayed in bounds. He was like, nah, saving myself.
Slide in bounds.
Right. Yeah, that was brutal. No, the Minnesota Vikings have had some missed opportunities, for sure. Okay, let's go to another team that has not had a ton to work with. In fact, this was a team, I'll be honest, that was actually really easy for me because the New Orleans Saints have had a lot of bad teams in their history. Founded in 1967, you know, for their first 20 years as a franchise, the New Orleans Saints broke 500 two times. Somehow they managed to win a Super Bowl here just recently. But for the New Orleans Saints, who's the guy that comes to mind as being any kind of a spectacular player, the best player in their history, at least?
It's got to be Drew Brees.
Yeah. Yeah. I hate to be that recent but it's not even close. I mean, Drew Brees is 94 and 64 as a starter. He's thrown a zillion touchdowns down there. Obviously, what he has done in New Orleans, and, you know, we kind of forget, it's been a little bit of time now, but with all the things that went on with Katrina, all the things that were going on that year down in New Orleans, and obviously the things that they had seen down there, to have a team come together like that Saints team did, just right place, right time. Drew Brees was the right guy for the job, but he stepped in and he just did a phenomenal job in New Orleans.
Yeah, and another exciting player to watch. You know, you've got quarterbacks, they say hit him in the numbers, hit him in the hands. He aims for pinkies. He aims for the upper right-hand corner of the five. Very, very accurate. You know, there's a couple other guys that made the list. They weren't close to number one for me, but Ricky Jackson.
Yep, Ricky Jackson was very, very quality.
And, you know, another outstanding anchor, Willie Rolfe.
Yeah, Willie Rolfe was very good down there, and a guy that provided protection and blocking lanes for a number of decent runners. You know, when you think back to some of the runners that he blocked for, it wasn't that he had spectacular talent behind him, but he had some... Somehow, it seemed like they always had some decent runners back there, and it had a lot to do with running behind Willie Rolfe.
Got to give a little love to Peyton's dad.
Yeah, Peyton's dad wasn't bad. Archie Manning played in some really, really tough situations. I mean, he played in the days of the Aints and didn't have any help around him. He somehow produced a little bit. They lost all the time, but Archie Manning somehow produced. Just a wrong place, wrong time to be with one of the worst franchises in NFL history at that time. Archie Manning still found ways to produce. Maybe, I don't know, a guy like Joe Horn, Ricky Williams, I don't know. Anybody else get on the list? Didn't Sam Mills, didn't he start in New Orleans?
He did.
maybe they should retire his number in New Orleans instead of in Carolina like they did. It's the dumbest thing ever, retiring him there. So New Orleans Saints will go with Drew Brees. I think that's actually an easy one. All right, let's move on to a team with more history, and they go way back. The New York Giants joined the NFL back in 1925. They won four pre-Super Bowl championships, and they've won four Super Bowl championships. The New York Giants, another team for me at least, they had a lot of pretty good players. A lot of history and a lot of talent that has been through the New York Giants franchise. Who's the guy that stands out for you with the Giants?
Just to reiterate your statement, I had a hard time narrowing it down to one guy. And like with a couple other teams, I could probably be swayed another way.
Yeah.
Quarterbacks. Think of all the quarterbacks. Outstanding Hall of Fame quarterbacks that they've had. Going way back to Wyatt Tittle,
yeah,
Frank Gifford, Phil Sims, Eli Manning is very good. He's not up to his brother yet, but he's won two Super Bowls.
He's won two Super Bowls, sure.
Honestly, once I thought of this man, it became more clear. It's got to be LT.
Yeah, it's got to be Lawrence Taylor. Lawrence Taylor was absolutely amazing. 132.5 sacks, 10 times to the Pro Bowl. Was the MVP of the league once and did win two Super Bowls. And he probably leads the league in, cocaine consumed, arrests maybe. He was completely crazy. But the thing about Lawrence Taylor, it didn't matter who he played in. And he was playing, they were playing against some really good teams, playing against good Dallas teams, playing against good Washington teams at that time. It wasn't that he was, every single team was scared to death of Lawrence Taylor. I mean, If you watch back on some of those old NFL films clips, there's a clip, and I want to say it might be Ken O'Brien, and Lawrence Taylor sacks him, and he says something like, "You guys are going to have to do better than this." And if you look at Ken O'Brien, I think it's Ken O'Brien, you look at his face, it is sheer terror. He is scared to death of that man.
Scary man, to be sure. An amazing freak athlete, redefined the edge rusher, I guess. You know, if you refer to the movie Blindside, it actually starts and ends with references to Lawrence Taylor.
To LT, sure.
About how important the left tackle, the Blindside lineman has become because of Lawrence Taylor.
Well, yeah, because you see that highlight, and of course we all remember it, unless you're too young and you've had to look it up, of him going blindside, getting Theismann, and snapping his femur in half. And I still remember that game. Like, I vividly remember that game. And Lawrence Taylor grabbing his helmet and, like, signaling, like, he knew right away it was horrible. But it sounded like a gunshot.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just horrifying. But that was just the kind of havoc he could wreak every single week. I mean, a lot of what Joe Gibbs did, a lot of what Bill Walsh did was geared specifically, how on earth can we figure out where Lawrence Taylor is on every single play? Because he's the guy that's going to wreck our offense. Now, LT was an absolutely incredible player. You mentioned a couple guys, Frank Gifford, Wyatt Tittle. Put Michael Strahan at least in there, the production that he had. You know, Frank Gifford is kind of interesting because, of course, we remember him as a talking hairdo. We remember him as being married to a crazy person. You know, I believe he went to the Pro Bowl as both a wide receiver and as a halfback, and he was a pretty good quarterback. Gifford was a lot better, I think, than a lot of people remember. We just remember him from his broadcasting days, but he was pretty good.
Yeah. Harry Carson, too.
Yep, Harry Carson was very good. And a guy that same thing, played with LT, a little more of the solid, maybe not as spectacular, but the guy that, you know, would step in and make the plays. You mentioned Phil Sims, another good one. LT, the guy for the Giants, for me. All right, moving on to the Philadelphia Eagles, an old team going way back to 1933. They did win three championships before the Super Bowl started, but they have been 0-2 in Super Bowls. With the Philadelphia Eagles, a number of guys to choose from. There was one guy that stood out for me. Let's see if this same guy matches up for you. Who do you have with Philadelphia Eagles as their top player?
Tim Tebow.
Absolutely. Looks like we agree. Done.
Been waiting to get my Tim Tebow reference out there. Just to show you how incredible this man was, we mentioned him for another team, but I'm going with Reggie White.
It has to be Reggie White. 198 sacks just in an Eagles uniform. He went to 7 Pro Bowls just with the Eagles, and that might have been one of those teams that we might need to go get a 30 for 30 going on that team, because that team was loaded. I mean, you had, you know, the late Jerome Brown, who we don't even know how great he could have been.
Most people don't realize how much that affected that team.
Yes, because you had, you know, Randall Cunningham. Randall Cunningham was one of my favorite players to watch. Talk about guys. We talked about Barry Sanders being one of those guys. If the TV was on and he happened to be on it, you had to. Randall Cunningham was that guy. Reggie White was that guy. That Philadelphia team, I want to say it was that around 93, 94, right in that era, they were absolutely loaded.
Loaded with talent.
Keith Byers, Keith Jackson, Wes Hopkins. I mean, just a loaded team. Reggie White was the guy on defense.
One a little bit more recent, but he's got to be in the top handful of their all-time players, Brian Dawkins.
Brian Dawkins was very good. We remember him here, obviously, in Denver. He switched over and came to Denver, but he was very productive with the Philadelphia Eagles. And I'll tell you what, he never gets the credit. He only got the blame. But how do you not at least give a little bit of props to Donovan McNabb? I know Philly fans, you know, they boo Santa Claus. Donovan McNabb was pretty good. They didn't realize how good they had it when they had Donovan McNabb.
Absolutely. I still remember his days at Syracuse. Tough guy.
And, I mean, all he did was win. He didn't win the Super Bowl. I understand that. Win against a pretty good, you know, New England Patriots team. But, I mean, they did win. He had a very good winning percentage. I'll give you Chuck Bednarik, a guy that was known throughout the league back in the 60s as being one of the toughest guys in the NFL. Bill Burgee was another guy, you know, in the 70s and 80s that was a very, very talented linebacker that was very good. You know, they had a couple of big wide receivers in Mike Quick and Harold Carmichael that I at least have to throw out there, had some very productive years with Philadelphia. I think Reggie White is our clear guy for the Philadelphia Eagles. All right, another tough one, and this is one that I struggle with. I have my selection for who I think the top player for the San Francisco 49ers is, but I can totally be talked out of it. The Niners were founded back in 46. They are 5-1 in Super Bowls. Team that has had a ton of success in the postseason. Took them a while to get going. Obviously, in the early 80s, they kind of going, and then they just blew up. But the Niners are a team that have been loaded with talent. They have had some excellent players. All right, I'm going to throw out my name, and I'm fine if you want to override it and you want to go with somebody else, but I'm going to go with Jerry Rice. He rewrote the record books. He had over 1,200 receptions, 176 touchdowns. He was 13 times elected to the Pro Bowl. I'm going with Jerry Rice, but I can be talked out of it.
I had a hard time. It literally came to a coin flip here. He's my 1B, my 1A being Joe Montana.
Joe Montana, sure. Joe Cool. And I mean, how could you not with what he did? And we do kind of forget, because especially younger fans, they don't know. And older fans, you tend to forget. But the Niners weren't anything when Joe Montana got there. I mean, and Bill Walsh and obviously the what he created there, the offense that he created and his West Coast offense and that kind of thing, was a perfect fit for what Montana did. It's funny because they always said that he couldn't really throw the ball much more than 40 yards. And he always said, well, in our offense, I don't really have to. But he was so accurate and so precise, he never got rattled. Of course, the Super Bowl story there against the Bengals in that second time Super Bowl. And the final drive, he looks up in the crowd and goes, hey, isn't that John Candy? And everybody's like, yeah, I think it is. And he's like, all right, let's go win this thing. And they went down the field and won it. But yeah, Joe Montana, I can totally go with Joe Montana as the guy.
And exact same thing for me. I could just as easily say Jerry Rice just because he holds all the records.
Sure. No, he set every receiving record. It is owned by Jerry Rice. And a guy went to a small school, Mississippi Valley. Nobody thought much of him. They said, well, he doesn't have great speed. His hands are okay, but can he even get open? It seemed like he just had a different gear once he caught the ball, though. He'd catch those quick slants. You better be sure-handed on that tackle, because if you don't tackle, he's taking it to the house. I'll throw out a couple more guys, and this guy could be a 1C. Ronnie Lott is another guy that, I mean, one of the toughest safeties, maybe the best safety ever. Definitely one of the greatest hitters ever, but Ronnie Lott could be top on the list if we really wanted him to be.
He would be on the top of 80% of the other team's list. That's how much talent the Niners have had. I agree with you. I had him right behind Rice in Montana. He had to wait his turn, and there was a little bit of rivalry going on there, but yeah, Steve Young.
Yeah, Steve Young. You want to look at just percentages and what he did once he got into that offense. his numbers are incredible. His winning percentage with San Francisco was incredible. So accurate and so dangerous. You couldn't just pin your ears back and go after him because he would break an 80-yard touchdown as a running quarterback.
He set some completion percentage numbers before the NFL made it so easy to throw.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and he was doing it in a different era when it was, I mean, you could grab onto wide receivers, you could bang wide receivers, you could smash him in his head after he threw the ball, which really is what, you know, ended up costing him his career and retiring probably a little earlier than what we would hope that he had. Yeah, Steve Young had some phenomenal years. Someone like Dwight Clark had some very good years up there. Few different
Roger Craig?
Yeah, Roger Craig. Big, big years. And a real key to that offense, because not only was he a guy that could smash up the middle and run so hard, you have that memory of those high knees coming up, but he was so dangerous in the passing game and such a good sure-handed receiver down the field. Roger Craig was just a perfect fit for what Bill Walsh wanted to do. Some really good players came out of San Francisco. All right, we're going to move on to a team that maybe hasn't had quite as good of players. I know, if you're a young NFL fan, you're like, what? This team's loaded. Yeah, they haven't been for years. But the Seattle Seahawks, you know, they joined the league in 76 as an expansion team. Coming up with top players for the Seattle Seahawks was actually a little bit easier, I guess, for me. Who's the guy that makes the top of your list, though?
Well, as you mentioned, the real success has just come recently. So eventually, your Shermans, your Wilsons, your Lynches, even though he's retired, are supposedly certainly going to be mentioned in there. But for me, all time, it's Steve Largent.
Absolutely. No, Steve Largent had the bizarre thing about Largent, because I believe he was drafted by the Dallas Cowboys, maybe, or at least signed with the Cowboys when he first came out, and then they didn't really want him, and so he went to Seattle. But the amazing thing, here's a guy that if you looked at him, you wouldn't even think he's a football player. He didn't look like a football player. I mean, skinny, white guy, didn't look like, I mean, he wasn't very fast. He had phenomenal hands, and he just found ways to get open. Steve Largent had over 13,000 receiving yards. He had 100 touchdowns, went to the Pro Bowl 7 times. And I don't know that he played with that much talent. Jim Zorn, very, very good. Dave Craig, pretty decent, but kind of a journeyman, you know, quarterback. Steve Largent just found ways to make plays. And I know as Denver Bronco fans, he crushed our souls many, many times.
Absolutely, absolutely. Cortez Kennedy, yep, wreaked some havoc for a while.
No, and Jim Zorn was a guy when they first started, didn't have a whole lot. Jim Zorn would scramble around, and the left-hander just found ways to throw the ball downfield. Dave Brown, Kenny Easley, and the other Kurt Warner, who the other Kurt Warner tore up the Broncos a few times too.
That's true. That's true. Now he was a little bit of a flash in the pan, but
yeah, he
when he was good, Sean Alexander was
very
leading
good.
The league.
I'll give you a brief story about Sean Alexander. I don't know if we have time for this, but we're going to make time. Sean Alexander is playing for Alabama back in the college days, and he catches a little screen pass, and a defensive back comes up and pops him right in the mouth, like hits him square in the face. And he gets up and he's rolling over and he's wiping his face off and he says, I can't taste anything. And the ball boy, like, he's hurt, he's going to come out of the game. The ball boy for Florida yells, Sean Alexander, you just got the taste knocked out your mouth. And he said, there was no way I was leaving that game. He said, I got back up, I went back to the huddle, and I refused to leave that game. Sorry, just a brief Sean Alexander story. I know those are rare. All right. We've got two more teams left on our best of list. Let's go to a team that has not had too much success. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they joined with Seattle in 1976. You know, they had 14 consecutive losing seasons in the 80s and 90s. The Buccaneers really, really struggled. They did finally get to a Super Bowl. They won a Super Bowl. Is that in 2000 maybe? Right around that time, they beat the Raiders in that Super Bowl. But for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who is the guy that stands out for you as the best player in their history?
What got them to the Super Bowl and what got them the recognition and got them up into the upper echelon of the league finally was their defense.
Yep.
I actually had a couple of them that I really liked. I settled on Derek Brooks.
Okay.
I've got Derek Brooks. Warren Sapp is up there. Yeah. John Lynch certainly is one of them as well.
Sure.
Rondé Barber.
Yeah. Yeah, I had Warren Sapp as well. You know, Warren Sapp had 77 sacks as a nose tackle.
That right there. I don't know if people can appreciate what that really means.
Right.
Majority of your sack guys are the edge rushers.
Yeah. To go right up the gut. And that's the only reason that I have him ranked as my top guy. I think everything fell into place because he could disrupt the middle so well. He was so big. He was so strong. And even though he looked like a bowling ball, he ran like a deer. It didn't make any sense that he was that agile and that quick as an inside lineman. But that's why I put him as high as I did. I had Derek Brooks as kind of my 1B as well. And I'll give you another guy. Leroy Selman, back in the 70s, put up some huge numbers. One of their first true superstars, because that franchise didn't have much to choose from. Leroy Selman was a guy that was very, very good. I don't know, Doug Williams.
Mike Alstott
was very good. Work done put in some pretty good seasons down there as well. Ricky Bell was a guy that we lost way too early. A lot of people won't remember him, but he had some very, very good seasons when he first started in Tampa. He ended up getting very, very sick, and we lost Ricky Bell too early. But yeah, Tampa hasn't quite had the guys that some of the other franchises had, but the top guys are pretty darn good. Moving on to our final team of the NFC, we have reached the Washington racist nicknames, Washington Redskins. This is a team that goes way back. I mean, back to 1932. Started actually in Boston, and then they moved to DC. They are 3-2 in Super Bowls, and they've got a number of guys to choose from. I probably shouldn't do this. I went way, way, way back. My top guy, Sammy Baugh, 6-time Pro Bowler. Seriously, did you go with Sammy Baugh?
I absolutely did.
Wow. Here's the thing. We didn't orchestrate any of this together. We didn't sit down and write this together. But, I mean, Sammy Baugh led them to 2 championships. Here's the crazy thing about Sammy Baugh, though. He had a season where he led the league in passing touchdowns and in interceptions as a defensive back playing both ways. I know he probably played like against Ulysses S. Grant or something, but Sammy Baugh was really, really good. Washington Redskins, they've had some really good teams. They don't have the players, I guess, to me, that stand out quite as much individually, though.
Yeah, just like you, I went back to slinging Sammy Baugh for my number one player all time. Some pretty good ones a little more recently. Darryl Green.
Darryl Green was very good.
Art Monk.
Yep.
John Riggins.
John Riggins, very, very tough inside runner. I had the guy that was kind of opening those holes for Riggins was Russ Grimm. And Russ Grimm had some very, very good seasons. Charlie Taylor had some good days. And Ken Houston was a very, very tough defensive back. But like I said, I think they've had some very good teams. And I got to be honest, I got to give a ton of credit to Joe Gibbs for putting these teams together, because I don't know if individually their talent was that breathtaking. You think of those teams, you know, back in the 80s and stuff, they were winning with, you know, the Joe Theismans, John Riggins, and Joe Washingtons, and guys like that. Good. I don't know if they were great. But, I mean, Joe Gibbs is, I think he's the only guy to win 3 Super Bowls with 3 different quarterbacks. Mark Rippon wins one, Doug Williams wins one, and Joe Theismann wins one. He's a really, really good coach, but individually, I don't know if the talent maybe stands up with, you know, someone like the Cowboys or maybe the 49ers or something like that.
I know we're doing players, but Joe Gibbs.
Yeah.
It was a very, very important cog in that Washington Redskins history.
Absolutely, he was. There you have it. Our Daily Dose picks for the best players in the history of every team in the NFC. Did you agree? Did you disagree? Was there a team that we missed? Was there a player that we forgot about? Feel free to shoot us an email. You can reach us at dailydosesports@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on Twitter or Facebook. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. That is DALY, Daily Dose Sports. Hey, next week, you're going to have to trust me on this. And don't worry, we're going to get you to all the AFC picks as well. But next week, I've got something a little bit special for you. Next week, I'm going to get you ready for the 2016 Olympics in Rio like no other. You've got to trust me on this one. You want to make sure that you tune in for next week. We'll get to the AFC's best players as well, but next week I've got something special for you. Hey, if you get a chance, head over to wherever it is that you download the podcast. Give us a quick 5-star rating. Give us a quick review. Just say something simple. It doesn't have to be anything big. Just, hey, we love the podcast. We'd love to see it keep going. Or you can head over to rogueintel.com and let them know over there how much you are enjoying the Daily Dose. We would appreciate that so much. I have to say thanks to Mike for coming in into the Daily Dose studios and giving us his picks for each of the best franchise players on each team in the NFC. I appreciate that so much. We'll do it again very, very soon, and we'll sit down for our AFC picks as well. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next week.